Hi, this is Mark. In this approximately 17-minute episode of the Candle Show podcast, I share a story produced by 60 Minutes that recounts the circumstances surrounding the death of Mr. Lewis Allen. To any nation that views itself as the social and political standard by which other nations should be judged, I say the following. Physician, heal thyself.
The theory that Sheriff Jones killed Lewis Allen has been in the public domain for quite some time. The FBI would be remiss in our duties if we did not pursue that theory.
She's talking about a mostly forgotten but historically significant civil rights killing that has never gone away.
My name's Steve Croft. We're from 60 Minutes in New York.
47 years later, we found the prime suspect in Lewis Allen's murder very much alive in a Mississippi town called Liberty.
Well, you know, Sheriff, you could clear this up with a lie detector test.
Well, it ain't gonna get cleared up.
Tonight on 60 Minutes.
5 years ago, the FBI announced that it was reopening more than 100 unsolved murder cases from the civil rights era of the 1950s and 60s. The goal of the Cold Case Initiative was to try and mete out justice in what seemed to be racially motivated killings that were never prosecuted. Not many 50-year-old cold cases ever get solved. Memories fade, evidence is lost, witnesses and suspects die or disappear. But that's not the case in the death of Lewis Allen, a mostly forgotten but historically significant murder that helped bring thousands of white college students to Mississippi in the Freedom Summer of 1964. The murder is still unsolved, but the case has never quite gone away, because the chief suspect is very much alive and walking the streets of a town called Liberty.
Liberty, Mississippi is a small rural logging town not far from the Louisiana border. The FBI believes that some people here have been keeping a dark secret for nearly 50 years from one of the ugliest periods in the state's history.
You will not be allowed to proceed past this point today.
It was a time when civil rights activists were beaten and arrested, when state and local politics were controlled by all-white citizens' councils, and when people like Lewis Allen were murdered in cold blood without redress.
You keep a photo of Lewis Allen on your desk?
I do.
Why?
The case bothers me. I feel like we failed, and not just the FBI, but law enforcement.
Cynthia Deedle is a 15-year veteran of the FBI's Civil Rights Division, and until a few weeks ago was in charge of the Cold Case Initiative. Of the 100 unsolved, racially motivated murders she's been charged with investigating, none has been more promising or frustrating than Lewis Allen's.
Somebody knows something. Some husband came home with bloody clothing. Someone got drunk in a bar and said what he was doing last night. Someone knows something.
But in the early 1960s, people in and around Liberty knew to keep their mouths shut. A violent chapter of the Ku Klux Klan used cross-burnings, abductions, and murder to enforce the doctrine of white supremacy and to intimidate the black population, most of which lived in shacks with no electricity or plumbing and were not allowed to vote. Civil rights leaders like Robert Moses, who came south to help them register, were frequently the target of violence.
Liberty was not a place that I liked to go.
Why?
Because it was a place where you weren't safe if you were doing voter registration work.
It was in Liberty that Moses met Lewis Allen, a rough-hewn World War II veteran who walked proud and was not afraid to stand up for himself. He ran a small timber business, was one of the few blacks in Liberty to own his own land, and always wore a hat, which he considered a sign of self-respect. He was not the type to seek out trouble. Robert Moses says it found him.
He was at the wrong place at the wrong time. He saw something that happened, and he was deeply disturbed and affected by that, and so he had a basic life decision to make.
On September 25th, 1961, Allen was walking past this old cotton gin when he saw something that likely got him killed.
Lewis Allen witnessed a powerful state legislator by the name of E.H. Hurst shoot and kill an unarmed black man named Herbert Lee. Allen told his friends and family that he and other eyewitnesses had been pressured into lying about the shooting, into saying that it was self-defense. Later, Allen decided that he needed to tell the truth.
One of the people Lewis Allen told it to was Julian Bond, who is trying to register black voters in Mississippi for the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He would later become a legendary civil rights leader.
This was not a self-defense action by the state representative. This was out-and-out murder. That's all it was. But Lewis Allen agreed to lie about that.
Why do you think he lied?
He lied because he was in fear of his life. If he had implicated a powerful white man in a murder of a black man, then he was risking his life.
Did you encourage him to tell the truth?
I tried to encourage him to tell the truth, but, it was like saying, why don't you volunteer to be killed?
But Allen's wife would later testify that his conscience was clipping him, and he decided to tell FBI agents and the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights what really happened at the cotton gin. This document from FBI file says Allen changed his story and expressed fear that he might be killed. He asked for protection, but none was provided. Almost immediately, word began circulating in Liberty that Lewis Allen was prepared to change his testimony.
He was threatened as a result of the fact that he was going to change his statement, that he did change his statement.
And the FBI was notified of those threats?
Yes.
Did the FBI do anything?
Yes, we referred that to local law enforcement authorities.
It's certainly possible to conclude the local law enforcement people were the ones behind the threats.
There is a theory out there that speaks to that, yes.
In fact, it's been the prevailing theory for some time, although the FBI cannot officially confirm it. There is a 1961 reference in the FBI file to a report that Allen was to be killed and the local sheriff was involved in the plot to kill him. And we found this 1962 letter from Robert Moses to Assistant Attorney General John Doerr alleging the same thing. They're after him in Emmett County, it says, and makes reference to a plot by the sheriff and seven other men.
He was afraid of the sheriff's department.
I think he was, yes.
And I think he was afraid of the Klan, although they seem to be sort of the same thing in Liberty at this time.
I'm not sure I can say that.
Julian Bond was less circumspect.
The law enforcement, you suspected they were members. If you wanted to be a mayor, a city councilman, a county commissioner, the sheriff, if you wanted to be in the legislature, you had to have some connection with the Klan.
And in the Emmett County Sheriff's Department, the person with the best connection was Deputy Sheriff Daniel Jones. His father was the exalted Cyclops of the local Klan, and Jones himself, according to this FBI document we found, was suspected of being a Klan member. Jones, who's alive and still resides in Liberty, was recently visited by FBI agents who wanted him to take a lie detector test.
What was he like?
Well, mean.
Hank Allen was 17 years old when his father was killed, and he remembers Daniel Jones as his main tormentor. He says he watched Jones harass and repeatedly arrest his father on trumped-up charges, and one night beat him outside their home.
And he had handcuffed him, told him he was under arrest. So Dad asked for his hat. He told Dad, no, you can't go get your hat. Dad said, well, Dad, my son is on the porch. Can he bring me my hat? He drawled back. He took a flashlight. And he struck my dad and broke his jawbone, handcuffed.
When he got out of jail, Lewis Allen did something that was unheard of for a black man in Mississippi. He went to the FBI and lodged a complaint against Deputy Sheriff Jones and testified before a federal grand jury. The case was thrown out, and the situation in Liberty continued to deteriorate.
They stopped selling Dad a gas in the town. They stopped buying his logs. They just more or less just tried to blackball him.
It got to the point, the harassment and just him not being able to survive in Liberty, that he decided to leave and to go work in another state. And it's the night before he is due to leave that he is killed.
Lewis Allen was ambushed here on a cold night in January 1964 after getting out of his truck to open the cattle gate that led to his property. His son, Hank, was the one who found him.
I didn't know why he would park the truck in the middle of the driveway and leave it like that. Mm-hmm. And I climbed up in the truck. The headlights was real dim. And when I went to step down out the truck, I stepped on something. And that's when I stepped on my daddy's hand. He was lying up under the truck.
He was killed with two blasts of deer shot to the head. The investigating officer was none other than the newly elected sheriff, Daniel Jones, who Hank said made it clear to the family why his father had been murdered.
He told my mom that if Lewis had just shut his mouth, that he wouldn't be laying there on the ground. He wouldn't be dead.
You think Sheriff Jones did it?
Yes, indeed. By all means. If he didn't do it, he was the entrepreneur of it.
Jones told the newspapers he was unable to find a single clue.
How would you characterize the investigation that Sheriff Jones conducted?
He did not develop any fingerprints, any physical evidence, and he never developed any suspects.
Not a great investigation.
Probably could have done more.
And the same might be said about the FBI at the time. It had limited jurisdiction over civil rights murders and little inclination to investigate them. In fact, it's not clear that anyone investigated Lewis Allen's murder until 1994, when Plater Robinson, an historian at the Southern Institute at Tulane University, began digging into it.
From day one in Liberty, people told me that Daniel Jones and a colored man killed Lewis Allen.
Robinson has spent 17 years combing through archives and tracking down people to interview. One of them was an elderly preacher named Alfred Knox. Knox told Robinson in a 1998 tape-recorded conversation that his son-in-law, Archie Weatherspoon, was with Sheriff Daniel Jones when Allen was murdered.
My son-in-law went with him.
To kill Lewis Allen?
To kill Lewis Allen. He didn't know where he was going until he got in the car. And he said, will you pull the trigger? Will you shoot him? I said, no, I ain't going to do it. That's what my son-in-law said, I ain't going to shoot him. You come out and kill him, you kill him. So he killed him.
Both Knox and his son-in-law took their stories to the grave. But Plater Robinson says the answer to who killed Lewis Allen can still be found in Liberty.
A lot of people are dead, but there's still a number of significant people still alive.
Like who, besides Sheriff Jones?
Well, Charles Ravencraft, he lives down the road. He's quite healthy.
We found Charles Ravencraft at the Liberty Drugstore, presiding over a coffee clutch of old-timers, some of whom were around when Lewis Allen was murdered.
People in this area that just don't do much talking.
For years, Ravencraft was sergeant-at-arms of the Mississippi legislature, and at the time of Lewis Allen's murder, vice president of the Americans for the Preservation of the White Race in Liberty, a front group for the Ku Klux Klan.
Was it around, Charles?
What was that?
Klan.
Sure. In here.
Weren't you guys in it?
They wanted about a Klan if you don't tell everybody what your business was.
Ravencraft indicated that he hadn't lost much sleep over Lewis Allen's murder and told us he had no idea who killed him.
No, I don't. He lived a lot longer than I thought he'd lived. The kind of fellow he was, a little bit overbearing. I don't think his civil rights had anything to do with it.
Winborn Sullivan wasn't around when Lewis Allen was killed, but he ran the Liberty Drugstore for 36 years.
I think there are people who know what happened and who did it. But they're not willing to talk about it, and they won't talk about it. You'll never find out.
They told us they don't see much of former Sheriff Daniel Jones these days. He spends most of his time on his property just off the state highway. We decided to approach him with our cameras concealed, on the off chance he might give something up. After waiting for a half an hour on the porch, he rolled up in an all-terrain vehicle with his wife.
Hello.
My name's Steve Croft. How you doing?
Pleased to meet you.
We're from 60 Minutes in New York. We're down here working on a story on an old case of yours and was wondering if you'd have some time to talk to us about it.
No, sir, I don't believe so.
You don't think so?
No, sir.
The Lewis Allen case?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
He was polite and cordial, said he didn't want to talk, but he kept on talking.
There was some bad blood between you and Lewis, right?
It was not no bad blood between them. Apparently, I'm talking more than I need to, but the truth sometimes has a way of slipping out if you try to keep it covered up.
Mm-hmm. Were you in the Klan?
I won't answer that one. I'd take the fifth on that one.
Jones confirmed that the FBI had already been there asking some of the same questions.
When I told you I don't care to discuss it anymore, mm-hmm. and you just keep coming to your
well,
educated approach.
No, it's not my educated approach. Look, you haven't told me to get off your property. Just ask me one last question.
Okay, be sure it's the last one.
Can you look me in the eye and say you weren't involved in it?
No, sir, I wasn't involved in it.
Well, you know, Sheriff, you could clear this up with a lie detector test.
It ain't gonna get cleared up.
The theory that Sheriff Jones killed Lewis Allen has been in the public domain for quite some time. the FBI would be remiss in our duties if we did not pursue that theory.
And it's still just a theory, a circumstantial case based on motive, suspicions, hearsay, and the words of dead people. There's no forensic evidence, no murder weapon, no eyewitnesses, and only one FBI agent working the case part-time.
My name is Cynthia Deedle.
At a town hall meeting in nearby Baton Rouge, Deedle tried to shake out some new leads and enlist journalists, activists, and students to help the FBI solve the murder. But there were some in the audience who still mistrust the FBI and think the cold case initiative is little more than public relations.
There has been nothing did. There has been not one arrest. There has been all kind of investigations made. And I hate to say things like this, because the FBI is the only help I got.
Should the FBI be doing more?
Should be doing more. You know, thank God for these people who are doing it. But we can't turn law enforcement over to journalists. We can't turn it over to academics. We can't depend on some guy at Tulane to tell us who's killing people in Mississippi. Come on.
Why are you relying on reporters and professors and people in
people
the town?
People who are not the FBI.
This is the most powerful law enforcement agency in the country. You have subpoena power.
We do. We have resources that we could bring to bear on any case.
Why don't you bring them?
They have been, but I've learned in these cases that a witness, a family member, may be more comfortable talking to you than she would be talking to me.
For Hank Allen, the time to solve his father's killing was 47 years ago. He believes the people who know what happened, black and white, would rather forget it now, and that the wall of silence and the passage of time have granted immunity to those he thinks are responsible.
Here's a guy who goes on living his normal life, enjoying life, but they feel as though we're doing something wrong by saying something about the murder. In other words, you should be quiet about that. That was in the past. Well, it's still in my present and in my future. I have to look at this every day.